You're listening to Goodfellas Minute 16.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say.
Hello and welcome to Goodfellas Minute, the only podcast that analyzes Martin Scorsese's film Goodfellas one glorious minute at a time. I'm Ron Richards, and with me are Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hello, everyone.
We're back together, the gang. Connor, you're back and joining us.
It made me nervous.
Yeah, well, Alex and Pete, Alex, they're good.
They did well, so I have twice as many notes as I had the week before.
You really got to prepare.
I know, we're going to need to do that stuff that Pete did. Because, honestly, we had a conversation. You know what? Don't worry about it.
All right, well, so minute 16 starts with the mobsters applauding young Henry on the steps of the courthouse again, rewarding him for getting arrested. And the minute ends with a trucker getting out of his truck and sauntering across the parking lot at a diner. So
we're going to get to that saunter.
Yeah, we're going to get to that saunter indeed. but first off, Connor, this is your first. You missed the mobsters congratulating Henry on you broke your cherry.
That's right. I did miss it. Did you have a point?
Well, did you like it? Did you like it? I don't know. Did you have any thoughts about that? I don't know.
You want to go back? You want me to talk about the last 5 minutes?
Well, you still got a couple of seconds in this minute.
This. Don't give away.
It's. It is funny that they're so brazen in the fact that they control the judges and the cops that they're all just there.
Yeah.
That there's no, they don't care.
There's at one point where everybody's mobbing Henry and they're hugging him, and the camera spins from Henry's point of view to the top of the stairs, and you're looking down on him, and everybody's pinching his cheeks and grabbing him. At one point, Henry points at somebody and does the gun, like, hey. Right?
Yes, he does.
I'm so worried that guy is going to listen and he's going to feel really bad about himself. I really like that like this had a really natural sort of sound that they just let them all be like, yeah, rude. Yeah. It's kind of dead and weird sounding. And it was, I guess it was kind of realistic in that way. I like how they also are all coming at you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's sort of when you start this minute, is it the first thing? They're all coming at you. I have dreams like that.
And well, they're all coming at you, and then it spins, and then you're with them. You're coming at Henry, and it's that slow zoom.
Wow. That's a hell of a metaphor, isn't it?
It is, right?
Well, there's also a lot in this film, and it'll come up later on in this week, in which the camera is either you or it carries a very claustrophobic feeling of being surrounded by everybody.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that Scorsese excels at in this film. If you go back to when his father beats him in the house, that low shot where you are with Henry when he's coming at you with the belt, he does that a lot in this movie.
Yep. And then we get another freeze frame.
Drink.
Drink.
That's your Anisette moment. That's what we're going to call it on this.
Are we actually keeping track of the number of freeze frames? We really should, shouldn't we?
Well, it's a little late for that now. Oh, we're just going to say drink. We're going to say drink. That's what we're going to do.
So here we're just the Idlewild.
But it would look funny.
Idlewild Airport, 1963, is the title card, and this is
time jump.
One of the most important introductions in the film is Idlewild Airport itself.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting about that, and you're going to talk about Idlewild, but what's interesting about this shot is that I was looking at it, and I don't think it's stock footage, but it's all dressed up to be period. They didn't have digital back then, so somehow they had to mock this up.
Oh, yeah, no.
To another airport.
No, this shot, I looked it up, actually. This shot is a cargo area at modern-day JFK Airport.
Yeah, so you can see the city in the background.
Yeah, this is actually on location, and they mocked up this section with the old cars and all that sort of stuff to look at. But yeah, wow. This is straight up legit. Like they took a corner of the airport, a cargo area away from the main terminals, and filmed this down to the plane in the background.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's real movie making.
And what's funny, I've never actually I've seen it, but I never noticed it and looked at it. And yeah. I thought, well, that's something, right? Like that's really, you know, the cherry on top of the movie. And it's gonna be one of those things. I think we're gonna notice a lot of things like that. But
right.
That's them doing it right.
What's interesting is that, so the time jumps in 1963. We're going to get to older Henry in a second. But the events that happen as a result of JFK Airport or Idlewild take place in 1967.
Right.
So I wonder why they chose to do it in a different year in the film.
Well, they're standing out the shot after that, then they're standing outside of the airline diner, which is, I think they're trying to say it's near the airport. The truck that comes by is from the airport. However, watchers will know the diner is nowhere near JFK.
Yeah, well, I think we're jumping all ahead. So what Connor say? So a lot of the events of the movie that we're about to get into all in real life took place in 1967, but this title card says 1963. And how I always interpret that was that they wanted to establish Scorsese wanted to establish the location and Idlewild Airport as being an important hub. And for those who don't know, Idlewild Airport was the original name of what is now today JFK Airport.
Well that's the fun fact is that in 1963, this was the year that it changed to JFK.
Right, yeah.
Oh, really? I thought that was later. Huh, interesting. Nope.
It was the year he was killed.
I mean, I think this is just one of those liberties.
Yeah, I think what they're trying to do is show the time jump, show that he's older, but also that it's still earlier on, establish the location, and then let everything else play. I mean, they go fast and loose with the real-time events, you know, over the next 10 years pretty fast. I think that's to be expected. But so quick history on Idlewild Airport. As we mentioned, it was the modern-day JFK Airport. Do you know where the name Idlewild came from, guys?
Well, it was a golf course.
Connor does. He did his research as well. Yeah. So the Idlewild Golf Course it was built on. The project actually started in 1943, and the idea was to build another airport to provide relief for the overcrowded LaGuardia Airport in 1943.
never worked.
Which, think about that, because what year did LaGuardia Airport open?
It can't have been much earlier than that.
So LaGuardia Airport, which is in the north part of Long Island up on Queens, it opened, where is it? I'm trying to find it. It opened in 1929. Jeez. And it was, I'm sorry.
So by 14 years later, they were like, hey.
Yep.
Enough of this.
Yep. So it didn't take very long. It was an airfield from 1929 until 1934, and then Firo LaGuardia, during his tenure, made it into a commercial airport. So in 15, 20 years, LaGuardia became so overcrowded they needed to build another airport. And the idea was that Idlewild would be the international airport and LaGuardia would be the domestic one. That was the idea. So it opened in 1948, and basically, the Port Authority forced the airlines to use Idlewild for international flights and not LaGuardia. Like, literally forced them.
So, actually, you know what's interesting is that the name wasn't even – Idlewild wasn't even the real name of the airport.
Oh, was it?
It was a New York International Airport.
They just so Idlewild called was just, it that?
Everyone just called it Idlewild because
of that's the awesome. Course.
And that's what it sort of stuck.
I know supermarkets like that. Like, they changed the name and sold it a bunch of times and just nobody paid attention. They just didn't take. I like that.
Yep.
Here's in terms of New York City, I'll always stand up for LaGuardia. It's a good airport.
I like
as long as you didn't. I lived near there.
You only stand up for it because you lived 5 minutes from it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, no, I'll join Josh in that for the majority of my life, LaGuardia was the go-to airport.
Of course it was, like, but it doesn't mean it wasn't a terrible airport.
No, I know. What I'm saying is that like literally every flight I took, you know, as a kid and like through the 80s and 90s was at a LaGuardia. I remember it could be, you know, growing up on the North Shore of Long Island, taking the Northern State all the way across, going by Shea and then going to the airport. And it wasn't until, you know, 2000s or so that I completely just switched and now all my flights go through JFK.
Right.
I'll do LaGuardia whenever I get the chance. It's easier. You just get on that little bus there. You get over to the N.
Yep.
You're done.
I think it's also
great. Or if you live right where the N is, like I did, that's also helpful.
It's also great from a historical standpoint because there are so many decrepit, falling down old airplane hangars with the old American Airlines logo and stuff. I love it. Like from a historical standpoint. So I like it. I like that the name of Idlewild Airport was never actually Idlewild Airport, except the three-letter identification was IDL.
Well, that's how much the name took.
Yep.
Right, okay, so that's enough for Airport Corner.
Yeah.
The hero shot of Henry Hill, which
is
we obviously already met Ray Liotta's Henry Hill in the very first scene of the movie, but this is our hero shot introduction to Ray Liotta as a quote unquote adult Henry Hill. In this point in 1963, Henry Hill's 20 years old.
As opposed
to Ray Liotta's 36-year-old. Performance.
Is that how old he really was then? He kind of pulled it off. I always think of him as younger than that. I think more impressive is the fact that Oscar winner Joe Pesci is supposed to be 18 to 20 there.
No, right. He's supposed to be 13 here.
That's an old 13.
Yeah. It's a rough 13. He's had a lot of mileage on that 13-year-old face. But he kind of also pulls it off. I mean, it doesn't really matter.
No.
But this is where we get this sort of long, slow pan up, low angle shot of Henry Hill leaning against the car next to Tommy.
It's the beauty shot. I mean, it's the same thing as like what you see, the point of view of like a guy's eyes going, you know, up a girl's body in a movie normally. And it's these guys instead. It's Joe Pesci.
I gotta admit, talk about the hero shot though. I mean, despite I never bought that he was 21 in this movie, by the way, either, but Ray Liotta. But talk about looking cool. I mean, the you know, from the shoes to the suit to the shirt.
Well, we like to talk about all the clothes, Ron, which is he owned, and I assume this whole outfit is up there.
Oh, man. I mean, this whole outfit is, and the slow drag on the cigarette.
I was going to say, if you got this outfit, you'd start smoking.
Yeah, the shirt unbuttons, so you see the undershirt. Like, it's just, and even Joe Pesci. I mean, I'll even give Joe Pesci. I'd wear that blue shirt. I don't know if
I've seen you in that outfit.
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know if I'd wear it with a blazer like that, but I would wear that blue shirt. Yeah,
you would 100% wear it with that blazer. Even kind of looks, his hair is kind of like your hair.
Yeah,
actually, you could be.
Got a nice dark head of hair.
Yeah,
so, I like how they both check their watches in sync.
Well, they're waiting. They're waiting for something, and they're waiting for a truck to pull up, which looks conspicuously like the truck that Robert De Niro hijacked a couple of minutes earlier.
Again, this is one of those things where the first time I really looked at that truck, and I was like, they totally salvaged some piece of junk truck and kind of barely
pushed it into the parking lot.
Yeah, they like it's all rusted and beaten. Like, it actually looks like a 40-year-old truck.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of a dullish, stolen red color. And it's fine. I've never noticed
the back pushing it into the parking lot.
Yeah. It's a small parking lot. I've been to that parking lot, and that truck's not fitting.
Well, speaking of the parking lot, this is the Airline Diner, which in reality is the Jackson Hole Diner, which is still open and around to this day.
Signs there.
It's located on Astoria Boulevard in Queens, and actually, if you are driving on the approach to the Triborough Bridge, or now the RF, is that the RFK or the Koch? What do they?
That's another example of something not taking.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's the RFK. I'm like, well, all your signs still say. Yeah.
But if you're driving along the approach to the bridge, if you look up to the right at some point, you will see the neon Jackson Hole Diner sign.
I drove past that so many times. I'm like, I'm going to go there someday. I never did.
Yep.
Open 10 a.m. to midnight.
Yep. Also, if they were going to shoot this today, they would have to take down a lot of signage from down that area. There are billboards and everything there now.
If they were going to shoot it today, you'd just digital. Take that all out.
Yeah, no, but it's just I just find it amazing how clean that area looks in this shot as compared to how busy it looks now.
Well, here's the thing though. The thing about Queens though is that you can if you get rid of those signs, it's indistinguishable.
Yeah.
In time. Yeah. Like if you were to look from the top of that hill where the cab stand is, you know, and again you would take the signs off, you know, it's all the same.
Yeah.
It does not change.
Yep. All right, so we'll find out a little more about this truck driver in our next minute, as well as more a little about Idlewild Airport. But do you guys
want to know a little about this music?
Oh yeah, so yeah, the great song.
Yes,
yeah.
You can't skip the music. The music is integral. This is "Stardust" by Billy Ward and His Dominoes. They're an R&B group formed in 1950. They performed in the 60s. Took them a while. They're one of the first rock and roll songs. One of their first rock and roll songs was "60 Minute Man." In 1951, that's a marathon right there. It was a cover of gospel and R&B to pop. Stardust was a 1957 release. It was number 12 on the U.S. pop charts. It was one of the first multi-track recordings in rock and roll history. Billy Ward of His Dominoes arranged and wrote the music and played piano and hired singers from his students and then some other talents. It also launched the career of one Jackie Wilson.
Yeah, Billy Ward and His Dominoes. It was just like a rotating crew of singers that Billy Ward would hire. So
they were his.
Great song. Great song, though. Stardust is really that's it. And it totally sets the moment so good. Even though it's a 1957 song, clearly it's still in this kind of dreamy early 60s Camelot era, you know?
Yeah. It is that for these guys.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if that's why they chose the year, because that was the year, obviously, Camelot died with...
Yeah,
with JFK, and this is the year everything sort of changes for these characters.
Yeah, possibly.
Before we go, I know that last week there was a drought in terms of the use of the word fuck. Today also zero fucks. Zero fuck count zero.
Right. There is going to be a minute though coming. It has.
Well, what happens is Pesci hasn't talked very much.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah. He's the fuck found.
You're gonna look at the curve of fucks throughout the movie, and it's gonna start peaking up in a minute, and it's gonna make up for the past 5 minutes or so.
He's responsible for I think 50% of the fucks is what I read. So we'll find out. And also, I did notice this as I was going through and checking. A lot of these fucks happen kind of in the background, not in the main conversation, but in side conversations.
So. Oh, that's the tough one, under the muttering in the background fucks. Yeah, yeah.
So you're missing hard. All these fucks.
I'm not, you know, saying this is the official count. I'm just saying this is our unofficial fuck count, which is
right. We're doing our best, all right?
Yes.
So, all right. So anything else on minute number 16?
That's all I got.
No, we're good.
All right, that's a great suit. All right, so tune in tomorrow for minute number 17. Until then, you can check us out on Twitter at GoodfellasMin and on Instagram and Facebook at /GoodfellasMinute. And, of course, you can find all of our episodes and links to everything on social media over on GoodfellasMinute.com. And for the past couple of weeks, we've kept it kind of brief here on the end, but we just wanted to let everyone know that we've launched a way for you to help support Goodfellas Minute. If you go to Patreon.com/GFM, or you can just go to GoodfellasMinute.com/support, where you can find links to our Patreon or links to shop via Amazon. Help us out, help keep the servers running, and help keeping the show coming out on time for the next like 6 months. So please, we thank everybody who helps us out. We appreciate it. If you have any questions or anything of note, you can email us at contact@goodfellowsminute.com. And if you like comic books, check out our sister site over at ifanboy.com for our weekly podcast there. So until tomorrow, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh.
Or will I go from rags to riches? My fate is up.